23. Into the Web. Through the eyes of the war coordinator, Prefect Degara watched another coral skipper explode into a shower of flashing bits. "All glory to you, warrior," he mumbled reverently, the appropriate farewell to one killed gloriously in battle. He was not distressed at the sight of one of his warriors dying in the battle on the far side of the Helskin Sun, though. To die in battle was among the highest honors a Yuuzhan Vong warrior could achieve. Nor was Prefect Degara distressed that the battle was apparently going against the small coral skipper force the war coordinator had dispatched to meet the incoming enemy force. This group was supposed to lose, was supposed to retreat, and in doing so, bait the enemy in closer, closer, to the true power of the Praetorite Vong, to the thousands of waiting coral skippers, both small single-pilot craft and larger ships with a multitude of gunners, to the great ground-fire capabilities, both missile and gravity well, to the powered energy of the Yamask itself, an energy that bound the Yuuzhan Vong together and that would undoubtedly disrupt and even destroy any enemy ships wandering too close to the mighty war coordinator. In came the remaining coral skippers of the pursuit group, soaring around the Helskin Sun, flat out for the home base. And in came the pursuing fleet, more than a dozen large ships, including one huge and impressive vessel, and scores of smaller craft. A wry smile spread across the eager prefect's face. The victory this day would be major, greater by far than the death of Belkaden or of Cernpadal. "They are joined," the prefect communicated to his war coordinator. The creature's confidence brought an even wider smile to the prefect's face. He felt it then, the common bond sent out by the Yamask to all the Yuuzhan Vong warriors, the coral skippers returning and the thousands more even now in hiding on the back side of the planet. This was the true glory of the war coordinator, a perfect communication and coordination tool. And Degara felt the Yamask's confidence in the planetary defenses, comprised mostly of an energy field brought up by the great creature's personal powers, along with the many volcano guns of the three world ships leeching their energy from the planet itself, and the many strategically placed Dovin Basils with their devastating tractor beams that could bring down a moon, never mind a starfighter, and more general gravity wells that would disrupt technologically based communications and systems. In they came, and Prefect Degara waited eagerly. Han kept the Falcon back as the bulk of the fleet soared in, as did Luke with the Jade Saber, both of them keeping a protective watch about Jaina and her defenseless carry ship. Given the beginning of the battle, the rout on the far side of the sun, it seemed as if Commander Rojo had been correct in his estimation of the enemy forces. Now, with the brief respite, Han had to find out about his oldest son. "Where's your brother?" he called to Jaina, and her pause told him all that he needed to know. "Luke, I need you," Han called. "I heard," came the response. "We'll get to the planet as soon as the Rejuvenator and her escorts clear." Luke's voice trailed off, and as soon as Han looked ahead to the mounting battle, he understood why. Thousands of coral skippers had come out at the approaching fleet, zipping and zooming in and around the many starfighters. What had been a rout and chase was suddenly a scene of absolute chaos, of battle joined heavily. "Stay back here," Han ordered Jaina, and he throttled up the Falcon, rushing to join the fight, the Jade Saber pacing him all the way. "Get those guns singing, kid," he called up to Anakin. "Don't call me kid," came Lando's dry response from the bottom gun turret. He finished with a startled cry as a pair of coral skippers soared past the Falcon. Up front, Han and Leia ignored them, more intent upon the sudden barrage of ships that had come out to challenge the fleet. Ahead and to the side, a pair of Ranger gunships opened up, dozens of batteries on each, sending lines of laser fire streaking out in a myriad of directions, forcing all the nearby coral skippers into wild and desperate, and often unsuccessful, evasive maneuvers. "Impressive," Han remarked. "Newest and best," Leia started to reply, but she stopped short and flinched when a cruiser off to the side of the Falcon went up in a huge explosion. and then a larger coral skipper rushed in at the nearest Ranger gunship. They heard the banter between the two gunships, one commander saying that he had the coral skipper, all guns trained forward, and calling for the other to cover his attack. And so the gunship cut loose, a tremendous barrage of flashing lasers that streaked at the coral skipper and disappeared. "Gravity well," Han muttered breathlessly, "just like that thing on Cernpadal." Then Leia cried out, and Han lurched to the side as she cut the Falcon sharply and turned her up on edge, then dived down before a pair of approaching coral skippers. "They've got a gravity well," Han tried to explain, "a big one." Even as he finished, Leia brought the Falcon up and around, the gunship spectacle coming back into view. The coral skipper continued to somehow absorb the laser blasts, bending them into a field of such tremendous gravity that they seemed to simply disappear. The coral skipper soared past the firing gunship, moved in between it and its companion, which also opened up all guns. Then the strange enemy craft began to spin, faster and faster, bending the laser streaks. Han and Leia heard other nearby pilots screaming for the gunship commanders to get out of there, and so they seemed to be trying, breaking off their attacks and turning tail to the coral skipper. But they couldn't break free and began inadvertently circling the coral skipper. Faster and faster they went, tighter and tighter the orbit. They came crashing together, all three, and at that precise moment the coral skipper gravity well dissipated and they all went up in a tremendous flash of brilliant energy. Han glanced nervously at Leia. The Ranger gunships were the second best thing they had brought out here, and they had just lost a third of the group. And now they heard the calls from Kip and the starfighter pilots, waging a blistering, weaving battle against a swarm of the enemy ships, and those calls were not of victory but of surprise. "They're better than we thought," Leia remarked, watching and listening to the distant spectacle of that battle, for the X-Wings, top-of-the-line starfighters, were barely holding their own. "Give us support, Rejuvenator," came Kip's plea. But the Rejuvenator had her hands full, coral skippers buzzing her from all angles and somehow avoiding her devastating cannon arrays. "Going in for the planet," Commander Rojo's call came across all channels, and the great Star Destroyer throttled up and soared fast for the frozen planet, her forward batteries beginning the barrage against the surface. Han winced at that sight, and so did Leia. Jason was still down there. The Jade Saber cut across their view screen, lasers firing, coral skippers on her tail. "Got you, kid," Han called to Luke, but he had hardly started after his friend when he had to pull back, cutting hard the other way to avoid the coral skippers cutting across the Jade Saber's wake to open fire on the Falcon. The quad laser cannons above Han began thumping away. "They're coming in hot," Anakin cried from the pod above. "Keep it steady," Lando piped in. "We'll take them." Lando ended with a startled shriek, and the Falcon was jolted several times from hits on the left flank. "Where did they come from?" Lando called. Han and Leia put the Falcon through all her moves, dipping and spinning, cutting fast, even pulling snap turns as if it was a tiny starfighter, usually to C-3PO's accompanying cries. But the coral skippers were good, amazingly so, pacing the larger ship's movements and keeping their attacks wonderfully coordinated. Suddenly, the thumping stopped from above, and no blue-white streak shot out from above the Falcon's bridge. "Anakin!" Han cried, thinking the worst. "Anakin!" Commander Rojo soon came to recognize that he was in trouble. The coordination of the coral skipper attack against his prized ship was nothing short of brilliant, and those starfighter squadrons sent out to run guard for Rejuvenator had all they could handle in running guard for themselves. Even worse, while the gravity wells coming at the Star Destroyer didn't seem anywhere near strong enough to tear her shields away, the stunning focus of targets by the coral skippers, coming in at different angles but attacking the very same spots, was drastically weakening areas of the Star Destroyer's defensive arrays. Rojo narrowed his gaze, staring hard at the planet growing larger on the view screen, Rejuvenator's forward batteries pounding away at the icy surface. They had to find a weak spot, Rojo knew. Damage reports chimed in from all about him, relating mounting problems on the Rejuvenator and relating the growing losses throughout the fleet. And then came the general alarms as an unknown planetary energy field gripped the great Star Destroyer. All of those alarms that were not local to the bridge washed out in a flood of static. Commander Rojo knew that he was running out of time. Anakin wasn't hurt, but neither did he begin to respond. He sat in his pod, watching the coral skippers, their coordinated, two-synchronous movements. They couldn't be improvising in such a pattern, with all of their movements so amazingly complementary. There was no way they could possibly communicate and react so fast. It seemed eerily familiar to Anakin. "They've joined," he called down to his mother and father, "just like me and Jaina and Jason in the asteroid belt." "It's just good flying," Leia returned. "I've seen better," Han added. Anakin shook his head throughout the responses, not buying them for a moment. He watched the dance about the Falcon and about the Jade Saber, watched the larger dance of coral skippers going on all about him, and he knew, and he was afraid. For not only had those small groups attacking the Falcon and the Jade Saber apparently found a level of symbiosis above the norm, but the entire enemy fleet had. Anakin sucked in his breath. He remembered how effective he and his siblings had been in such a state, and there were only three of them. The coral skippers numbered in the hundreds, if not the thousands. And they were acting as one, he sensed, he knew, joined by something that was like the Force, but that was not the Force. He tuned into the fact that his father and Lando were both screaming at him then, and so he went back to his guns. The battle continued to deteriorate for the New Republic forces, and the primary target of the enemy, obviously, was Rejuvenator, with a swarm of coral skippers buzzing her, nipping at her shields, and stinging her hull beneath. "We've got to get to Rojo," Luke called into Han. "We've got to get those fighters off him and buy him some time." "Great," Han muttered sarcastically. "Now I'm running bodyguard for a Star Destroyer." He turned a sly eye on Leia. "You see anything crazy about that?" Jason almost got a second Yuuzhan Vong right through the chest with his lightsaber, but the warrior was faster than he had anticipated and arched back enough so that the weapon barely nicked. And then the others circled the young Jedi, two producing thud bugs, the others pulling club-like melee weapons from their bandoliers. Jason sent out his blade in a wide sweeping arc, forcing those closest back. Seeing the opening, he leapt across the hole in the floor, forcing the Yuuzhan Vong to follow. Two loosed their thud bugs, the little living missiles whipping out for Jason. His lightsaber flashed right, then down and left, picking them both off. Four of the Yuuzhan Vong came rushing around the hole. The fifth reached for another living missile, but as he did, Danny leapt onto his back, clawing at his face. The alien warrior growled and drove his elbow hard into her gut, but she clenched her teeth against the pain and clawed on, her fingers working under the Nulith. But then the powerful warrior had her by the arm, stopping her progress in removing the mask. Danny improvised, pressing her finger against the side of the warrior's nose, the release point for the Ooglith cloaker. As the peeling began, he released Danny, and she fell back just a step, then lowered her shoulder and slammed him toward the hole. In he went, head first, and though his breather remained somewhat in place, a rush of water slipped down his throat and into his lungs, and even worse for the warrior, his protective suit did not hold, the Ooglith cloaker continuing its retraction. The freezing water sucked the heat out of the thrashing Yuuzhan Vong's exposed body. He tried to turn about for the chamber and did manage it finally. Too late. His arms wouldn't respond properly. He remained disoriented, with one appendage of the Nulith out of place and obscuring his vision. He clawed and scraped and gained no ground back up toward the chamber, and the cold, cold water closed in. Danny didn't see it. Another Yuuzhan Vong let fly a thud bug for her, and she couldn't get away from it, and she couldn't begin to block it. It caught her in the center of her chest, blowing away her breath and her consciousness, throwing her back into the floor. The Falcon's cannons, top and bottom, thundered away. Most of all, it was Anakin in the top pod keeping the increasing number of coral skippers off of the Falcon. His work with guns, spinning side to side, tracking and leading perfectly, proved nothing less than spectacular. Beside the ship, the Jade Saber with better gun controls on the bridge, and those controls worked by the skilled Luke and Mara, and with newer, faster, and more maneuverable thrusters, had an even easier time of it, but still the ship made little real progress in getting close to the swarmed Rejuvenator. And now Commander Rojo was calling out desperately for assistance through the almost opaque shield of static, and one side of the Star Destroyer sparkled with hit after hit inflicted by a continuing line of coral skippers. Then a barrage of larger missiles roared up from the volcano-like cones lifting up from the planet's surface. Rojo cried out one last time. Then he was gone, his ship flaming and angling down past the fourth planet, a rush of internal explosions coming up to outdo even the continuing barrage by the deadly coral skippers. It was purely overkill, for Rejuvenator was already dead. Jason blocked the swing of a club, spun about to bring his lightsaber in line to block a strike from the other side, and in the middle of the turn, snapped the lightsaber back, quickly and briefly, to intercept yet another thudbug. Then he did make the block, encountered with a roll and thrust maneuver that sent the alien attacker leaping backward. But another moved in to block, and Jason couldn't finish the move. And he had to turn back anyway, spinning fast to pick off two attacks, one up high, one down low, coming at him in superb coordination. He ducked purely on instinct, and the next thud bug shot over his head, or almost over, for Jason's weapon tip shot up, skewering the thing even as it passed. A series of several sharp twists and cuts picked off three more attacks from three different opponents. A brilliant defense, but Jason was working wildly and was making little ground against his enemies. These warriors were skilled. Jason might be able to beat any of them one against one. Maybe, and maybe, with luck, he could defeat two. But not four. No way. He continued to spin and to slice, to fight completely defensively, because to do otherwise, even within the grasp of the Force, would be to die. He chopped one club aside hard, then spun, expecting an attack from the other side. And indeed, he did see the two aliens over there coming at him, and hard, and it took him a moment to register the truth of the attack, to see the human hand covering each face, tearing at the mask. Miko Reglia drove on, accepting the punishment in exchange for getting his fingers into that all-important Ooglith cloaker release point. And as he had the living suits beginning their retraction, the battered young Jedi dug in his heels and pushed on even more powerfully, bearing his surprised enemies into the hole and going in right behind them. He felt the freezing water drawing out his life force, felt the thrashing, the punches, the kicks. But Miko Reglia, in this final act of defiance against the Yuuzhan Vong breaking, held on stubbornly, preventing the two warriors from scrambling back out of the hole, determined that he would not die before them. Back in the chamber, one of the remaining Yuuzhan Vong made the mistake of lurching toward the hole in an attempt to catch his falling kin. Jason wasted no time, leaping ahead, lightsaber flashing, going for the off-balance alien, and then, when that warrior's companion came in to defend, turning the attack fast upon him, scoring a quick kill with a thrust to the chest. His lightsaber cut through easily, coming out swift and sure, then swept behind the staff of the remaining warrior as he tried to get back to defensive posture, and took the alien's hand off at the wrist. A halt of momentum, a turn of the wrist, and Jason poked his energy blade deep into that warrior's chest as well. "Miko!" He only then heard Danny cry, and he turned to see her crawling for the hole. "Miko!" Jason glanced around, looking for solutions. "They brought an extra suit and mask for him," he said to Danny. "Get into them." And then he dived into the hole. Danny, suited, went in a few moments later, bearing one of the lichen torches the Yuuzhan Vong had carried into the chamber. She nearly jumped right out of her Ooglith cloaker when Jason appeared suddenly before her, shaking his head gravely, indicating to her that Miko Reglia was dead. He took her hand and pulled her along the underside of the ice crust back to the waiting Stylish ship, and somehow they managed to squeeze in side by side. Stunned and horrified calls jumbled through the open channels on the bridges of both the Millennium Falcon and the Jade Saber after the destruction of Rejuvenator. Most prominent among them, Kip Duron's cry for a general retreat. "Jump to hyperspace," Kip instructed, "all the way back to Debrillion." Do it, Luke seconded across all channels. All haste. Jaina on Mary Minor, came the call. Uncle Luke, Jason's still down there. Luke winced, not at her proclamation, but at the sight of another Ranger gunship blowing apart. We'll take you in, Jaina, he called back. Get close between the Falcon and the Jade Saber. We'll take you in. The battle was disintegrating before them. New Republic starfighters, cruisers, gunships vectoring away from the ice planet, each with a host of coral skippers in hot pursuit. The other way, toward the planet, went the tight formation of three ships, laser cannons firing from the lead two. They dived down, holding their relative positions, into the atmosphere of the planet, an atmosphere thick with mist from the barrage of Rejuvenator before she went down. They felt a tingling energy all about them, permeating their craft and their very bodies, felt the turbulence, the energy, and the gravity wells reaching up to grab at them, and even Luke and Mara Jade Skywalker, reputedly as fine a pilot team as could be found in all the galaxy, had all that they could handle in keeping the Jade Saber steady and on track. Luke knew the coordinates he had fed into the Ice Borer's nav computer, so he led the way. Jaina tried to call in, saying something as her voice broke apart about Jason altering course near the planet. It didn't matter, Luke knew. He tried to reach out for Jason with the Force, and at first nearly toppled with fear at hearing no response. But then he realized that it was this energy field interfering, extending even into that personal level of communication. He closed his eyes and reached in deeper, past the physical energy barriers, and he heard. Coral skippers came down at them, or rose up to meet them, and the laser cannons thundered on. They kept their run straight and true, and all of them knew that they couldn't keep this up for very long at all. The planet rolled below them. They drew closer. Lock in coordinates for hyperspace, Luke called repeatedly. Not leaving him, came a portion of Han's reply. Luke reiterated his instructions in no uncertain terms. We'll jump as soon as Jason blasts free, he explained. But again, Han came back with a determined, We're not leaving him. Jaina's screech followed. I'm hit, she explained. Jaina, Leia cried. I can hold it, she determinedly replied. An explosion tore through the ice pack up ahead, and a narrow shape lifted into the air. Before either Han or Luke, Leia or Mara could call out instructions, the Mary Minor swooped between the lead ships, rushing straight out to literally catch the leaping stylish ship with perfect timing. And before any of the four adults could offer any cry of congratulations, the Mary Minor disappeared, leaping to light speed with perfect precision. On the bridge of the Jade Saber, Mara glowed with pride and with awe. Both pilots on the bridge of the Millennium Falcon were struck all but dumb until Han finally managed to whisper, The kid can fly. An explosion shook the Falcon, and then the ship dipped suddenly as a tractor beam from the surface nearly caught it, poignant reminders that it was past time to leave. Coral skippers came at the two ships from every conceivable angle, missiles firing, and the surface batteries opened up, and the Dovin Basal gravity wells grabbed at them. But this was old news to the four pilots, particularly to Han Solo, and the ships went out past the reach of the Yuuzhan Vong and to hyperspace, Falcon first and Jade Saber right behind. They had escaped, barely, and so apparently had Jason. Still, none of them were ready to call this day anything close to a victory.